did that dog go? Comedy! Comedy! Comedy-O-Rama! Get in here right now.
Comedy-O-Rama Theater presents The Misadventures of Sherlock Holmes, the honest and true memoirs of a non-entity. Episode 3, Sherlock Holmes in Trouble.
Let me say at the very beginning that the thought had never crossed my mind of making public these scribbled notes that have grown yellowed and brittle, except this one, which was written on yellow fool's cap and was always yellow. These notes, which I had put from my hand so many years ago. I am Dr. John Watson, and I shall always remember with a certain dread that night, so long ago, when my dear friend Sherlock Holmes, who had spent many of his years fighting crime in London to the detriment of his violin lessons and my ears, found himself facing the possibility of common criminal prosecution. First of all, now this isn't the same as starting at the very beginning. We did that. First of all, let me say it was a cold, forbidding night in December of 1889. Snow flurries had been predicted, and having no penchant for the out-of-doors when the weather was inclement, regardless of those stories I wrote in which we drove off in a pounding rain, we didn't. We waited until it cleared up. I have a tendency to dramatize things. On this particular evening, Holmes and I had settled down in the cozy comfort of our rooms in Baker Street. Goose quill in hand, Holmes was completing his latest treatise, little innocent exercises in which he indulged himself and which harmed no one. They proved little but passed the time. When asked to acknowledge their worth, I would nod significantly, but withhold any spoken commitment. It seemed to satisfy him. With a light chuckle, he looked up from his endeavor and said,
No, I say, Watson, old fellow, what are you planning to do with your quiet evening at home?
I haven't decided, Holmes.
I have. I'm spending my quiet evening quite profitably.
Remember to tell me about it.
Oh, I'll tell you now. I have just dashed off a definitive treatise on nose prints.
Nose prints?
It will prove invaluable in the detection of crime.
Nose prints?
I am convinced, Watson, that a burglar, in the anticipation and excitement of stealing some object of value from a house...
Or flat.
Of course. A flat. Why not? Very good, Watson. A flat, indeed. In the anticipation and excitement of stealing some object of value from a house, or flat, would, before the actual execution of his act, press his nose against the window pane to see and gloat over the prize that would soon be his.
Your contention being?
My contention being that he would leave his nose print, and that no two nose prints are alike.
I think I'll go to bed.
Wait, I haven't finished. And when the nose print has been properly analysed, the burglar can speedily be brought to book. What is that strange expression on your face, Watson? Is it gas?
No, my dear fellow. I was merely making a mental note to give cursory mention to nose prints when I got around to writing up this adventure.
What adventure?
I'll see to it that we have some sort of an adventure tonight. I'll dream something up. Another of those dreadful potboilers I write about you and your pathetic little skirmishes with crime.
But I'm all settled and snuggy here.
You're all settled and snuggy here, but I'm bored out of my skull.
Bored? Look around, Watson. You have all these accumulating medical journals to read.
Quite, yes. Yes, I do, but I'm just not in the proper mood. I don't know what I am in the mood for, but it certainly is something more interesting than medical journals.
I would think that their perusal would add to your knowledge and bolster your expertise.
You would think that, eh?
I think that any thinking man would think that.
Did Mrs. Hudson leave any of that cold ham out?
Don't forget, you, as a doctor, were put upon this good earth to minister to the aches and pains of a suffering humanity.
Poppycock. I was put upon this good earth because my parents had this thing about each other, and a properly executed document which legalized such activity.
You mean a marriage license?
You're very quick.
And my quickness serves me well in my profession. As a doctor, you have obligations to the demands of your profession as well. It seems to me that you're slighting them.
You ever hear of malpractice? If one of my patients has anything worse than a hangnail, I refuse to become involved. I absolutely refuse.
But how can you? You're a doctor.
I will experience no career worries whatsoever, as long as I continue to fabricate these preposterous adventures of yours, and as long as there's a public gullible enough to notice them in the bookstalls and read them.
Is this reference to what you said before about writing dreadful potboilers about me?
Of course, and your little skirmishes with crime.
Pathetic.
Hmm?
Pathetic. You said pathetic skirmishes with crime.
Pathetic little skirmishes with crime.
That's it. That's exactly what you said.
I'm glad we've got it right.
It's attention to detail. What do you mean you're writing adventures about me? What could you possibly write about? My life is so...
That's it.
Hmm?
Your life is so-so. That's where the fabrication comes in. With my words, my delicious sense of metaphor, I embroider, I give color, excitement, and romance to your mundane, trivial, inconsequential daily brushes with sneak thieves, bum pinchers, suspicious wives, and the like.
Bum pinchers?
I weave, with my innate good taste, literary talent, and my sense of the bizarre, a magic spell in the form of the myriad mystical...
Fabrications?
Fabrications, thank you.
It just came to me.
Which blend well with the London fog, the deliciously sinister denizens of Limehouse, and the spine-tingling sound of horse hooves on midnight cobblestones.
Could you give me an example of it?
There, you see? You obviously never read the ruddy tripe I write about you. In my journal, I might add.
Tripe?
I capitalized on a minor, embarrassing, unworkable talent of yours.
Talent?
And within the intricate mosaic of my profound cerebral concentration...
Concentration?
Must you echo everything I say?
Echo?
I devise a unique, capsulized, dramatic example of your powers of observation, and I called it deduction.
Which is what?
Deduction is... Well, for instance, this morning, you stopped by the snack bar at Charing Cross Station for an onion bun and a spinach omelette. Oh, yes, and you tripped over a cat near London Bridge.
It's true, Watson. Your deduction is true. I did have a spinach omelette. But how could you possibly...
How could I possibly know? Because you, at this very moment, and it's disgusting, you have a dribble of spinach between your two front teeth.
Hmm?
Well, do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
Thumb and forefinger, do away with it.
Hmm.
Holmes, not in your pocket.
Hmm?
The trash box. At any rate, that's a deduction.
But how did you know about the cat? Another deduction?
Exactly. Holmes, you are the clumsiest man in London. There's nothing you don't trip over. And knowing about the colony of homeless cats which infest the London Bridge area, because of the stinking fish remains, you most certainly would find a cat to trip over.
Brilliant! I am properly impressed. However, you were wrong about the onion bun.
No, I was not wrong about the onion bun.
You were? were.
I wasn't.
You were. Now, let me explain. I ordered an onion bun, but the onion bun man was late this morning.
Well, it comes to the same thing.
Well, hardly.
It comes to the same thing because I left myself an out.
Hmm?
If you'd listen, you would have heard me say, you stopped by the snack bar at Charing Cross Station for an onion bun and a spinach omelette. I did not say that you'd got an onion bun and that you'd devoured it.
It comes to the same thing.
Hardly.
You're quibbling, Watson. Admit it.
Well...
Admit it?
Well, I was right about the omelette and the cat.
Well, I'll give you that.
Those.
Whatever.
At any rate, there's your example of deduction, Holmes. A facet of the fascinating character you have become through my facile fingers on the fool's cap.
Why don't you talk like an ordinary human being, Watson?
There's not enough money in it. Before our paths crossed, Holmes, you were nothing. I created you, Holmes.
Mm-hmm.
And now, because of the cavalcade of astonishing but fabricated adventures you've had, and because of my brilliant imagination and the ability to put those adventures on paper, you have finally become... What, Holmes? Quickly.
Something?
Something.
I guess right. The latch is off. Come in.
Well, now, I'd say you were growing careless, Mr. Holmes. What if I'd been your notorious Professor Moriarty?
I wouldn't have said come in.
Oh, better jot that down, Dr. Watson. It isn't often himself can supply any of his own meaningful dialogue. Well... I can see that you gentlemen are in this evening.
Fairly obvious, I should say.
Watson was wondering about the cold ham.
I was wondering about it at supper, so I threw it out.
Watson was wondering if there was any left.
I threw it out.
Well, then, there was some left. That's a deduction.
There must be a reason for your looking in, Mrs. Hudson.
There is indeed. I've been saving up a few choice bone-picking complaints. You've got my best rooms. Front view, meals whenever you're of a mind to be taking 'em. My Irish wit and wisdom I sort of threw in. A turn of phrase is what I have. A way of speaking, a point of view. The Irish took that great consonant-ridden language of the English and gave to it the breath of music. They sculpted the clay of it, added new contours so you thrilled to the sound of it. They made valleys and hills from the desolate flat of it. They folded into the butter of speech the light, airy meringue of the fairy's lexicon that freed the tongue and seduced one and all with their charm.
That ham was tainted, eh?
And you, Dr. Watson, the great writer, a pompous and proper phrase-maker you've become, but not where I'm concerned. You had only to put your head outside the door to enrich the feeble tales you tell with the meaningful dialogue my facile tongue could muster.
I put mustard on mine. I didn't notice.
It's all you and this Mr. Sherlock Holmes here. It's an ego trip in a hansom cab. Ah, what are you doing there?
I'm jotting that down. It's a nice phrase.
Well, I'm alluded to a few times. I'll admit to that. But any spurious lines you've attributed to me have not been properly researched. You have used me only to advance the plot and develop the continuity.
This is fascinating, Watson.
Oh, do be quiet.
There's been no delving into my personality, no rounding out of my character, my aspirations, my dreams, my psyche.
My foot. What you've just said, that should tell you something right there.
Tell me what?
That you are not that essential to my plots. You're peripheral. You're not pivotal.
Piffle! You spake of me as if I were some frumpy, flat-faced, slovenly, illiterate, provincial, fish-eyed, frog-faced...
I'll say this, you have a way with words.
This is fascinating.
What I am! I'm dear, faithful...
Fat,
old...
Middle-aged, Mrs. Hudson... All you have to do is snap your fingers, and I'm supposed to leap like a gazelle?
More like a pregnant hotter beast, in point of fact. Mrs. Hudson, let's face the facts. In your small, miserly, greedy, self-serving way, I'm sure you fully appreciate the publicity given you and this uncondemned Baker Street fire trap. It's netted you a pretty penny from drooling romantics who swoon at the prospect of having lodgings under the same roof as the master.
Well, There is something in what you say, and a lot in what you don't say. But I must be honest. I can't deny it, Dr. Watson. Money talks, and I am a good listener. But I must be getting on to the second reason I come up here tonight.
You could have easily dispensed with the first reason.
Oh, if for one blessed moment I thought you meant that, Dr. Watson, I'd be perturbed.
Be perturbed.
Fascinating.
Accept us as we are, Mrs. Hudson. Nothing will change. You will maintain the meniality at which you are so adept. Living with us is just something you'll have to live with. It's like shaving around a wart.
Does Mrs. Hudson have a wart? I don't see it.
There'll be no pudding tonight. You've got a scurril type waiting to see you. I'll send him up. Here, you, tradesman, get on up here.
It's about running time, I'd say. Kept me waiting in that drafty hole, cooling me ears as it was.
Hello.
I take it you have a name.
But still was not used to his sore treatment. Let me tell you right off, here and now, no beating about the shrub.
No beating about the bush is the established flora of that cliche.
You watch it, mister. Oh, Bert's put people in a proper place for less than that.
Hello?
Perhaps you'd enlighten us as to the purpose of your call.
Hello?
Oh, I will. I will indeed. Indeed I will. That was the very point of me coming up after all, wasn't it?
Why do you address all your remarks to him and not to me? Whom do you wish to see?
Him. Sherlock Holmes.
I'm Sherlock Holmes. He's Dr. Watson.
I had it wrong way about then, didn't I? I thought you was Dr. Watson.
Why?
Well, he don't look as tacky as you is one right good reason. Another is, he don't look stupid.
You should have asked.
Tell us, Mr. Stover, what is it exactly you want?
I want the world-famous detective, Mr. Sherlock Holmes. That's him, right?
Right. Right.
Well, I want him to find a bloke what done in my Teresa.
When was this?
This very morning near London Bridge.
My heart goes out to you, Mr. Stover. Tragedy is a speciality of mine. Near London Bridge, did you say? Funnily enough, I tripped over a cat at London Bridge this morning.
You tripped over a cat?
Watson here says I'm one of the clumsiest men in London.
What's the cat's name? Teresa.
Teresa is a cat?
My Teresa's a cat, and you say you tripped over a cat?
Stay out of this, Holmes.
Why? There's nothing to implicate me.
Not so fast, me bucko!
Watson, do something. He's becoming physical.
He can't be mental. Let go of Holmes this minute.
I lost my composure there for a moment. I've been severely put upon. I'm not myself.
What have you got there?
Take a look at this bit of fuzz, which I stuck to poor Teresa's collar. Well?
This bit of fuzz? It's tweedy.
Tweedy indeed. Tweedy is what it is. Now, let me take this here bit of fuzz and compare it to Mr. Sherlock Holmes' trousers. It is the same material.
It is tweedy, I'll give you that. But how do we know that Teresa was actually done in? What proof do you have, eh?
Proof? You want proof, do you? I'll give you proof. She's here, with me.
Where?
In this paper sack.
Oh, my God!
I give you Teresa. Teresa, meet the pretty gentleman.
Oh, put it away. It's a dead cat.
Stover, listen to me. What positive proof do you have that it is indeed Teresa? It looks to me just like another cat.
I were prepared for that query, I was. Note the inscription on her collar. Put down in printed letters, I quote, Teresa, property of Bert Stover.
Do you have any witnesses? Do you?
This suspense is killing me.
Do you?
Oh, I have here an affidavit. An affidavit from Lemuel Sturgis. Think about that.
The name means nothing to me. Who is Lemuel Sturgis?
Lemuel Sturgis is the Onion Bun Man.
Oh. I never knew his name, only his buns.
I seen the whole thing. What do you say about that?
If he'd got his onion buns delivered on time, I might have had one with my spinach omelette. And I wouldn't have tripped over. I wouldn't have tripped.
Holmes, quiet.
Instead, Mr. Sturgis was skulking about looking at dead cats.
Teresa was my dead cat. He was a witness. He will testify in my behalf.
Don't misunderstand what I'm about to say, Mr. Stover. You can and should expect compassion from your betters. And while the untimely demise of Teresa was unfortunate, looking at it realistically, of what consequence is it?
Oh, gives you consequence. Teresa, the deceased one of whom I speak, I would like you fine gentlemen to know, is, or was, worse luck, the blinking public poster for Kitty Cat Cuisine, the well-known cat food preparation what comes dry and in tins. Well, where you been? You must have seen a great gaudy posters of Teresa eating a bloody slop.
Yes, I recall. In Piccadilly Circus it was.
The advertisement was so compelling, I bought a tin the other day, and we don't even have a cat. Mrs. Hudson does.
Teresa was a natural-born sales lady.
Mrs. Hudson took it to be canapé, and spread it on crackers for Watson and me. Delicious. The crackers, I mean. The Kitty cuisine wasn't all that good. We didn't finish the tin.
Rambling on and on, aren't you? Not willing to face up to the music. I'm holding you liable, Mr. Sherlock Holmes. You done in Teresa, a star performer, and my sole means of income.
But I have nothing. You can't get blood out of a carrot.
Turnip.
Or turnip either. Private detecting is slow right now. Watson here is trying to enhance my mediocrity. But it's not all that simple. I mean, he says I am, but it's not... I mean...
Drop it.
Mr. Holmes, in spite of myself, I've taken a slight liking to you.
I grow on people.
I've got a proposition to make to you. It just might save your bacon.
I prefer a more positive word than might, but do go on.
Well, I'm a promoter of sorts, and I've acquired a bit of land. And what I got in mind to do is put in roads, footpaths, and houses and the like for people to live in. It's my dream.
What is this proposition you wish to make to Holmes?
Oh, I would like to call this housing development Sherlock Holmes, if I had the exclusive rights to his name.
Sherlock Holmes?
Right. See, my thinking went like this. I don't read, see, but I've heard about all the Sherlock Holmes adventures, and how is every Tom, Dick, and what's-his-name is buying them, and they're making a packet at the bookstalls.
For whom?
Well, where you been? For Dr. Watson. He writes a bleeding tripe, don't he?
He told me he was keeping a journal.
So, if you'd give me the rights to your name, Mr. Holmes, well, I'd turn a deaf ear to that pasty face of yours and I wouldn't prosecute on the Teresa matter. And when the money starts rolling in from the property sales, I'll even give you a small percentage of the profits. Think it over, Mr. Holmes. It'd be a bit more than you're getting from old Sawbones here.
But I'm not getting anything from him. Watson, I want to see you about these adventures you're writing.
Make an appointment.
Leave off with him, Mr. Holmes. Stick with me. Can't you see it? It's a bleeding natural is what it is. The world-famous name, Sherlock Holmes, will attract no end of people to me house in development. I'll be wealthy, Mr. Holmes. You won't do half bad yourself. And in my new position as a gentleman... You'll give me the name of your tailor.
Well, I don't know about that.
I have a question.
You've been very quiet.
My question is this. Why are you asking Holmes for his permission to give you the use of his name?
I got lost there. Somewhere.
You might better call the project Sherlock Holmes, without the L.
What L?
The L in Holmes, of course, it's obvious.
You mean to tell me that Holmes has got an L in it?
Of course, it's spelled H-O-L-M-E-S. And all you need is H-O-M-E-S.
What are you doing to me, Watson?
And there would be no permission for rights necessary. There would be no permission for rights necessary.
He heard you. Look at his face.
The deal's off.
Off?
Off. I will do very nicely without you, Mr. Sherlock Holmes, with an L.
Does this mean I won't get my small percentage of the profit?
It does indeed.
What will I get, actually?
thrown in a pokey, most likely, because I'm suing you for doing in my Teresa. That's what I'll be doing.
But what about the blueprints?
First things first. Now what do you got to say?
For what it's worth, my tailor's name is Goldfarb.
And so Mr. Bert Stover, the scruffy cockney with the dead cat and the tweed fuzz, left our chambers at 221B Baker Street that night, never to return to it again. We did, however, meet in the court on the Teresa episode. Holmes continued to be as busy as ever, but still never secured actual employment, and therefore never received any remuneration for his services. Of course, he never asked for any. If he had asked, he might well be a rich man today. Instead, Holmes began losing interest in the cases he solved. For weeks at a time, he would sit at home and stare at his violin, which remained unplayed for months after Stover's visit. Holmes said that the sound of the bow across the strings reminded him of Bert's dead cat. As for Bert Stover, he eventually won his case against Holmes. I was forced to testify against my companion by performing the official autopsy on Teresa. Holmes, through a divine act, was able to make the payment to Stover. How could he, you may well ask? That is a subject which I shall address in the next adventure, when Mr. Sherlock Holmes gets out of trouble.
You have been listening to a dramatized version of Sherlock Holmes in Trouble, Episode 3 of The Misadventures of Sherlock Holmes. As Dr. Watson, you heard Henry J. Quinn. Sherlock Holmes was played by Vernon Morris. Jan Meredith was Mrs. Hudson. Bert Stover was played by Joe Bevilacqua. And Teresa was played by James Tyrone Jr. Technical production was by Dan Finton, remixing by Glenn Breda, and sound effects were done by Thomas Babkowski. Special thanks to Allison Need. Sherlock Holmes in Trouble was written by Dawes Butler and produced and directed by Joseph Bevilacqua. This is your announcer, Joe Bev, asking you to tune in again next time for A Study in Lavender, Episode 4 of The Misadventures of Sherlock Holmes.
Ah, yes, comedy-o-rama, indeed.
Waterlog Productions.
Comedy-O-Rama is supported by Bear Manor Media, publisher of the authorized biography of cartoon voice legend Dawes Butler, characters actor.
Who else? Yogi Bear.
For more information, check out BearManorMedia.com.